now we have Diane Thott to talk to us about soil health.
And I see that I mistyped my co-author's name. It's Clue, not Clued. Thank you, spell check. But anyway, my co-authors and I are with the new Soil Health Division with the NRCS. And we have a lot of challenges we're facing today in terms of agriculture. I'm sure a lot of you have heard these numbers already. 9 billion people to feed in 2050, or by 2050, and so in the next 40 years, we're expected to produce as much food as we have in the last 8,000 years combined. So that's a challenge. A challenge that is not made easy by the fact that we have a decreasing land base due to urban development or land degradation. We have increasing temperatures globally, we think we're observing more extremes in weather. So, drought or excess water in the spring, sometimes we get both in the same year. We did here in the Midwest. We got a very wet spring, and then we moved into droughty, short-term droughty conditions in July and August. We have soil degradation around the world, and unfortunately, the U.S. and North America is not exempt. We do have very degraded soils in our Midwest and degraded soils throughout most of the United States. This is due to soil loss. If you look at a lot of our soils, the topsoil is the third of the depth that was, 50 years ago or 100 years ago. We have loss of carbon. Certainly in many of our soils, we have lost over half of the carbon that was there pre-settlement times. So with those challenges in mind, how do we move forward? We have had a lot of talk in recent months of soil security. In fact, we had a global soil security conference down in Texas this spring. And soil security is in the center of items such as food security and water and energy, ecosystem service delivery, which I'll be talking a little bit about, biodiversity protection. You heard some about that in the previous talk, and of course, climate change abatement. I submit to you soil security. Soil health is at the core of soil security. The only way that we are going to maintain and deal with these other issues is if we maintain or even better improve the health of our soils. So what is the definition that I'm using for soil health? This is the Soil Health Division, for better or for worse, is what is being used by the NRCS Soil Health Division. The continued capacity of the soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plants, animals, and humans. When we talk about ecosystem services, things such as it's a medium for plant growth. It's necessary for water supply and purification. It's a recycling system. It's a nutrient cycling system. It's a habitat for soil organisms. And if you're an engineer, it's also an engineering medium to support buildings. So it all depends on your purpose and how you look at the ecosystem functions. Soil processes come together, physical, chemical, and biological, and at that nexus is soil health. It's the integrator. We can continue to look at these processes separately, but we really need to begin to looking at these processes in concert to understand what's happening in the soil system. So if we take this piece by piece, the physical processes, you can see a list there of several properties and processes that are important. And some of the indicators we use in terms of soil health is macro aggregate stability, which I think is the most important measurement we can make if we're just going to make one measurement out of the physical properties. It's not the important overall. But it's very important as an integrator between water partitioning. How much water is infiltrating versus being lost to runoff? And that has a critical importance for sustaining plant growth into those short-term droughty conditions that you get in the middle of a growing season. How much water has gone down, is stored in that profile, and can be used? And how well do those roots go down to be able to utilize that water at depth? Just a sample of some physical condition differences. On the right is they're both the same soil type. They're both the same soil series. And on the right, it's sort of been, you know, it's conventionally managed organic systems. It used to grow strawberries. Can't do that anymore. It's having a pretty hard time growing sweet corn. On the left, it's mixed a variety of vegetable crops, organically grown. This is a cover crop of oilseed radish. You can see the soil is richer, darker, the structure is maintained at the surface, and those roots are going down to depth, which is really important for, you know, any cash crop that follows, because roots are basically lazy, and they will go down an old root channel before they create a new one. So like in an aggregate, which is the basic element of soil structure, it's a little bit like a house. You have the structure itself, but all the interesting stuff is happening in the empty spaces. That's where the water flows. That's where the air is and gas exchange. That's where the microbes live. That's where other microscopic critters are living. So all the interesting stuff in that aggregate is occurring in the vacant interiors. And the fine roots in the mycorrhizae and the bacterial glues that hold all that together is dependent upon what organisms are living in that particular house. I also like to say that, you know, I don't know if you would like to have your house destroyed every, you know, few weeks, a couple times a year with tillage. You know, if you want to keep that structure whole. This is an illustration of why aggregate structure is so important. One of the first steps in erosion is as those aggregates are exposed to erosive forces, water or wind, but in this case water, they fall apart if they're weak. So the particles break up, they plug the pores, they develop a surface crust and it's a surface ceiling, and then instead of water infiltrating, we get water runoff. And we say that some soils are addicted to tillage because the solution for people when they see this is, oh, I've got to go out and till the soil. Well, then that breaks up even more aggregates, that weakens the aggregates that are there, and it starts sort of a downward spiral that's very difficult to recover from until you stop tilling. Chemical processes, actually our farmers and producers have a good handle on dealing with these. They know how to adjust for the pH. Unfortunately, I think they add a little bit too much N and P. We need to work on that. Salinity, of course, is important in the western states, especially in irrigated systems. And if you're looking at human health, we're beginning to see a link between the micronutrients that are taken up by the crop and then subsequent human health. And also certain micronutrients are critical for plant health. Zinc is especially important to citrus crops. Copper and zinc and molybdenum are also important soil enzymatic activity or cellular activity as a coagents for enzyme activity. There's interactions for the biology, and the biology sort of starts having interactions with everything. So it's interactions with the physical environment. You've got nutrient cycling and storage. You have aggregation and aggregate stability. You have biomass contribution to soil organic matter. Residue breakdown, very important to break down those residues, recycle those nutrients, create food for the microbial population, and continuing building that soil structure. Obviously, the plant community needs access to the nutrients, plant establishment. Some microbes produce plant growth hormones to help plant growth. And when you have a healthy, saprophytic microbial population, there is more suppression of plant disease. Plant diseases have a harder time taking hold when you have a large, diverse microbial population. This is one study that we did. It's a meta-analysis is what it was, looking at organic carbon and beta-glucosidase activity, which is one of the key indicators. Soil organic carbon, if you're going to measure one item for soil health, it's going to be soil carbon, organic carbon. The trouble with soil organic carbon is we often don't see changes in that for 3 to 5 years. First off, you have spatial variability, you have temporal variability. We also have methodologies. The best one is dry combustion, and it's just not terribly sensitive. So it takes 3 to 5 years before significant changes can be seen. Beta-glucosidase activity is involved in cellulose decomposition, and cellulose, of course, is the most abundant natural polymer that there is, and so there's a lot of enzymes that are involved in attacking that polymer. This is one of them. And what we discovered in the meta-analysis is the ratio when we normalize beta-glucosidase to carbon content. So that would be, you know, soil carbon to beta-gluc. When that was 10 or lower, that normalized value, that was basically conventionally managed land. Land that seemed to be in degrading. When we saw the number above 17, that tended to be long-term pastures, long-term no-till with cover crops. This ratio, we think it's interesting. I must say it has not been validated yet. So actually, something that we're in the process of doing is the Soil Health Division I'll talk about later. Part of it will be to see if this is valid or whether I didn't know what I was talking about when I did the meta-analysis. Could go either way. We do, as a division, are less than I think we're about 1 year old now. But the soil health management principles that we talk about, minimize soil disturbance, preferably go to no-till versus continuing tillage, maximize diversity in all levels of the biological strata, keep the soil covered as long as possible, and maximize those living roots. That's critically important. Now, this is sort of designed with row crops in mind. It holds to everything else, but if, let's say, you go to grazing lands, keeping the soil covered is probably the number one thing, because they keep it covered with, living biomass. And then if you have enough of that cover, the hoof action does not disturb the soil. So if you go to different systems, you can flip these in different orders. A third of our land is cropland. A third of our agricultural land is in improved pastures, and about a third are in native grassland systems. So why do we like roots in the living system? And this is one of the reasons right here. Besides the impact of roots to holding and maintaining those soil aggregates together and helping block soil erosion, here is the other thing. 20% of the carbon that is photosynthesized by a plant is pushed down through the roots out into the soil environment for food for the microbial populations, and then the microbial populations feed the critters a little bit higher on the food web. And so this is why we want roots, living roots, in the soil for as long as possible during a year. So this is just a visual impact of why we like no-till and cover crop versus no cover. We do have still see fields like this on the left. I still drive down. I drive between West Lafayette and Indianapolis a lot along I-65, and I still see fields like this. Bare soil subject to erosion. And in our wet springs, it can be pretty dramatic. And if you have no-till and cover crop, then you may have runoff, but you're not going to have any erosion. And you're more likely to have that water infiltrate rather than run off. Now, I want to caution with, if you're interested in going to a healthier soil system, even like you go to the doctor, they don't try to fix all your problems at once. They try to work on the item that's most critical and then work from there. When you've got a soil that's been addicted to erosion, you have to take baby steps to move toward a healthier soil. And so, we may, you till it, and then, plant a cereal rye as a cover crop. And then you go into your normal rotation. But then we might have you try to diversify that rotation. And certainly maybe start going into cover crop mixes. And there's a lot of experimentation because no two fields are the same. And we cannot make policy that treats all soil in the same way. Every field is going to have a different mix for, really, I'm that far away. Okay, so summer, this is an issue with nutrient loss due to water losses. Nitrogen went off in the spring waters, and on the left is cover crop. Corn yields, drought impact, and I'm going to skip all this because this is time for full 20 and not for the...
I gave you...
We're a little extra? That's fine. I talk too much.
Good information.
Okay, so let's go up here. One of the things I want to mention is that we're starting a soil health assessment initiative looking at sample data set. We've got 1,000 samples planned for next couple of years each. We're looking for long-term experiments that have good contrast in management systems, and we absolutely need the input data and the yield data, but then we're willing to pay for having some soil health assessment tests done, and then we'd return the data to whoever has those plots. So if you have some plots of those like that in mind, please give me, and there's my email, and you can catch me later. And the one thing I want to, soil health is beginning to work its way into the lay literature. This is from The Atlantic, the single greatest leverage point for a sustainable and healthy future for 7 billion and soon to be 9 billion people on the planet is underfoot in the living soil where we grow our food. Thank you.